I'm Marianne Kolbasek McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. Today I'm speaking with Jim Ralph, who is Chief Trust Officer for security software firm Savient. Jim has held CISO, Chief Security Officer, and other leadership positions at CVS Health, Aetna, MassMutual, the Health Information Sharing and Analysis Center, and the Financial Services ISAC. We're going to be discussing identity issues in healthcare. So, Jim, as we know, healthcare organizations rely on a wide variety of different kinds of users, from doctors, nurses, visiting clinicians, medical students, contractors, third parties, including medical equipment service workers. Then there's also the wide diversity in medical devices, software, electronic health record systems, and many more that are part of these environments. And then on top of that, patients also want electronic access to their medical records. With all of that said, when it comes to identity and access management issues in the healthcare sector right now, what are some of the top challenges that you see organizations struggling with the most, and why?
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head, Marianne, in that the top risk from a cyber perspective is clearly in identity management for access for all of the third parties that are part of the delivery of effective healthcare to patients. So if you think about it, if I have a, the need for shoulder surgery, and I want to get a specialist in shoulder surgery, in this particular type of shoulder surgery, I may look across, different healthcare providers to find who's the right specialist to provide, the services that I need. And if I do that, I'm going to want to get treated at the hospital that is close to my geography. And so the question is, does the doctor have rights to work in the hospital of my choice? And the answer is yes. And a lot of times doctors will work on behalf of their patients to make sure they have access. Then the doctor needs essential information on the patient in terms of the patient healthcare record. They need physical access into the operating theater for to provide the surgery. And they need internal access to function effectively in the operating theater. And their identity relationship will morph and change as the situation, changes in terms of their patient care. And it's complex. So for example, if I'm a doctor, I don't want to have to remember a password for every single hospital, surgical setting that I work in, because that's kind of cumbersome and onerous, onerous. And so, the challenge is being able, as a hospital provider, being able to provide access to healthcare professionals that are somewhat fluid in the delivery of healthcare to patients. Fluid in the meaning that there will be specialists that may or may not be affiliated with the hospital on record. They're going to need access to perform their services and managing their entitlements as the roles change and evolve, that's situational around patient care. Is a level of complexity that is often beyond the resources in identity management or digital identity management within a hospital system. So the primary focus, as it should be, is to provide the best care for the patient. But the delivery of that care involves so many different third parties operating in different roles and evolving in the delivery of healthcare services that it's a significant identity access management challenge, and it's not getting any easier. There's probably more fluidity of third-party service providers that are part of the healthcare delivery system that require identity management, capabilities. And historically, healthcare providers have operated in from an identity management perspective, using custom applications, which it also increases the complexity for changing the identity roles using those systems as the services evolve and change. So identity management for third parties is the number one cybersecurity challenge in healthcare providers today. And I think the industry overall needs a bit of an investment in maturing identity management practices, perhaps to be less dependent on passwords and more dependent on other authentication capabilities, and moving towards real-time identity security, which is an evolution of the maturity of identity management practices.
So, Jim, you mentioned passwords, and as we know, we hear so much about ransomware attacks and other kinds of cyber incidents that involve compromised credentials. Why is that happening in healthcare? And with everything you've said before, what steps can healthcare entities take to better prevent this from happening to their organizations, including with their third parties?
Yeah, it's happening because cyber criminals have figured out that working in systems that they penetrate is much easier when you have credentials that give the threat actor access to the systems. So there are ways of exploiting vulnerabilities to compromise systems. It usually requires some steps that are identifiable. So if there's real-time security monitoring in place for the enterprise, and a criminal compromises specific vulnerabilities, there's ways and methods of detecting that. And essentially there's a trail, an audit trail, for the path taken by the threat actor. But in a using compromised credentials to penetrate systems by threat actors, there is no audit trail other than an audit trail that looks at the surface level to be normal. And because nobody's, the threat actor's not compromising anything, they're using the actual credentials. Those credentials are being validated. And from a cybersecurity perspective, the indications are that it's a legitimate user using the system. So it kind of falls under the radar from a security monitoring standpoint. So cyber criminals know this. And most of them, and the large majority, are driven with a profit motive to earn money. That's essentially what they're trying to do. And so they're going to take the shortest route and the easiest route with the least amount of friction to do that. So that's why compromised credentials are so popular. Now, the reason the attack surface has increased in the use of compromised credentials are third parties have to be issued rights from an identity standpoint to access systems and issued credentials to use those systems. And the implementation of the third-party identity management processes are less mature from an identity management perspective than what employees will go through. And often they're distributed and isolated, making it difficult to apply consistent practices for all the various types of third parties that are part of the ecosystem of healthcare delivery. So that complexity is represents a significant challenge to any healthcare provider, and it's why the rise that we've seen in compromised credentials is a trend and continuing. So part of it is the threat actors like the way of penetrating systems with credentials, and part of it is that there are more third-party issued credentials, and often those credentials are not being managed effectively because of the diversity of the third-party users. So this is a problem that's been growing for many years. It's not a new problem, but if you think about what's changed, and this is true for healthcare as well as other industries, there's more use of cloud-based services, cloud-hosted services, in both healthcare and other industries today. And that means more accounts that can potentially be compromised, and more credentials that can be harvested. And so if I'm a software developer working for a healthcare provider and I'm a third party, I need access to certain development environment systems. And I could have potentially six different cloud issued accounts for different cloud services that are all part of the development process, all part of the software supply chain. So that's where how the attack surface is growing, and increasing in size causes more opportunities for threat actors to leverage compromised credentials. And that's why we're seeing the downstream effects of that, in terms of major breaches that are triggered by supply chain poisoning, if you will, of credentials harvested from third parties.
And Jim, we also see that, many healthcare organizations haven't done some of the basic things that are recommended, implementing multi-factor authentication for remote access, for instance. Why do you think that's the case?
Convenience. So there's always a balance between friction and getting your job done. And every enterprise has to kind of negotiate and navigate that balance. Now, the traditional model for authentication, which is multi-factor authentication, usually involving a user ID and password, and then some other factor of authentication, could be a one-time password sent through SMS. And that's kind of a norm, an established norm for multi-factor authentication. It's proven time and time again that multi-factor authentication is a significant deterrent to threat actors using compromised credentials to get access to systems. And it's pretty well established as digital consumers in the marketplace today. We're kind of used to and accustomed to multi-factor authentication today, but it represents friction. It represents a potential impediment to the customer experience. And this has been true historically and certainly true today. It turns out that some of the more advanced techniques for authentication don't rely on passwords as credentials, and rely on cryptography to do verification of a user or third party or employee user, depending on how they're accessing the system. And so we're moving as an industry away from passwords, which is a healthy thing because that means that credentials aren't stored, so credentials can't be compromised. And we're moving towards this concept of continuous authentication. And what that means is that in the established technology realm, once you're authenticated, and this is how we were all taught in terms of information technology, once you're authenticated, it's a binary outcome. It means that you are allowed into the systems. And if you're not authenticated, you're not allowed. It's binary. It's one or the other. You're either allowed in or you're not allowed in. Now, once you're allowed in, historically speaking, for the last, 30 years of computing architectures, you're pretty much trusted as a user because you pass through this binary authentication method. And it could be multi-factor authentication or single factor. But from a system standpoint, you have some credibility. You're trusted in the system. You're allowed to navigate to different features and functions based on what the parameters are for that user. And in what we're evolving to is a model that says instead of trusting you in binary authentication, we still apply those authentication techniques potentially, but we're going to monitor your online activity and we're going to compare that online activity to an established pattern. And if there's deviation from the pattern, we're going to trigger some automated workflow. This all operates in milliseconds that could revoke access because the behavior doesn't match to the established pattern. So it gives us a way of using mathematics, actually, and data science to apply identity management controls in real time to prevent and block potentially malicious activities. And the premise of continuous authentication is that even though somebody has passed through the password or user ID and password and user ID and password and one-time password, passed through the authentication methods that are established, they're still being monitored. Their activity is being monitored by models that are comparing the activity to established patterns. And if the deviation scores high enough, there's going to be action taken. Now, some people in the industry call this a zero trust model because in the former model, in a binary authentication, you're trusted if you're in the system, trusted to the degree that you can use features and functions available to you. In this model, there really isn't much trust as much as it's a validation that's a continuous validation happening based on the online behavior of the particular user matching an established pattern. And authentication is evolving in this level of maturity, and identity security is evolving in this level of maturity. So identity access management started out as transactions. You provision access to a user, you verify or validate that access on an annual basis called certification, and you deprovision access to that user. Those are the three fundamental transactions, if you will, in identity access management governance. And this is, established over the years, or decades as being kind of the norm. And so what we're doing is we're moving from that model to, and this is evolving over time, to a model where we're actually monitoring activity in a continuous fashion. As long as that activity is in certain parameters, there's no intervention. But if the activity breaks patterns significantly, then that activity is going to be constrained or limited based on the fact that there's a deviation from pattern. And that's kind of the evolution of the tools available to us. Now, having said that, it's still somewhat complex to apply those continuous authentication and validation techniques of zero trust to all the diversity of users that have different needs inside a system, in this case, in a healthcare provider. There's a lot of complexity to managing that. And so the simple outside-in perspective is that enterprises, healthcare providers specifically, need to spend a little bit more money on identity management to moving towards identity security and more towards a real-time monitoring and continuous validation of user activity. And there are, there's a lot of tools and capabilities that we can choose today to do that, to evolve to this kind of zero trust approach. But it takes investment to make the changes in environments, especially complex environments like healthcare providers. And systemically, that's what's necessary. And so the question is, does the healthcare provider have the appetite to make that kind of investment? And in some cases, they may be fortuitous and be able to make the investments. And in other cases, they may not be able to afford the retooling and use of new technology to move this identity security model for the future. And that's, problematic from a cyber risk or resilience standpoint.
And so, Jim, if a healthcare entity was to have the appetite and the resources to adopt this continuous identity management, verification, authentication, sort of model, how might that approach prevent some of the types of attacks and breaches that we've been seeing in healthcare?
Yeah, so the first fundamental change is there's less dependence on credentials, right? So that's kind of number one. The second component is even despite the use of credentials, there are more ways to prevent cybersecurity implications from malicious threat actors because they're thwarted by the real-time continuous validation authentication techniques. So it creates more friction, is probably the simplest way to describe it. And the friction in this case is for the threat actors. It's not friction for all users, it's friction for the threat actors. The other interesting dimension of the economics of this, I mentioned that it requires some investment in retooling some of the infrastructure for identity security and doing the implementation, and that's that costs money, time, and effort to do so. But operating a system, if you will, using a zero trust model and avoiding the use of credentials actually costs less to the enterprise over time. So, for example, the same three functions that we talked about, provisioning and certification and deprovisioning, if they're done or performed by humans, there's a unit cost for providing that capability. And that unit cost can be dramatically reduced if there's less dependence on a human to provision, to certify, to deprovision, and if there's more reliance on data science, which is the behavioral pattern matching options. And so as we evolve identity access security capabilities and rely less on humans, it's a significant, it's not a minor decrease in operating costs. It's a significant decrease in operating costs. So I typically tell enterprises to plan on 25% reduction in the unit cost for transactions and a 25% increase in the capacity of the humans performing identity governance. And the combination of both lower operating cost and higher throughput means a far better experience for the digital consumers or the entities that are provisioned and using the systems. And it all happens at a significantly lower cost. So the investment, upfront investment, which is certainly a financial obstacle to healthcare providers and other enterprises will pay for itself in the form of lower operating experience and a far better way of managing security that reduces the risk of cyber criminal activity impacting patients and customers from consumers.
Finally, Jim, what top issue are you keeping an eye on for the year ahead when it comes to healthcare cybersecurity right now, and why?
Yeah, the number one issue that I'm keeping an eye on and have been really researching for the last 4 years is the use of generative AI by criminals. And then there's a corresponding use of generative AI by cybersecurity professionals. And both of those dimensions of technology change are really interesting today. So, for example, if I'm a threat actor, I now have the ability, relatively easy, to develop deep fake technology. So we've seen threat actors using generative AI to bypass voice signatures that are used to verify someone's voice as a means of authentication. We haven't seen it across the industry at scale yet, but we've definitely seen it, and there are specific use cases that warrant investment from cyber criminals to try to gain an advantage. And generative AI gives capabilities for creating a visual image as well as an audio image that can be used to bypass security controls. And we haven't necessarily seen this at scale yet, but the choices of technology options in generative AI is increasing both for cybersecurity professionals to use that in a preventative way and for threat actors to use it in a malicious way. And so that's what I'm watching for the next year to see how much this is implemented and used by threat actors, and then correspondingly to understand how we can use the same advances in generative AI to protect the enterprise. The interesting thing about generative AI development is if you were talking to me a year and a half ago, I might be telling you that the number one risk of generative AI would be the prompts into an LLM might contain sensitive information that are then populating into the data set. And that's a risk. That's an information leakage risk. Having said that, a year and a half ago, we thought that would be the top risk. It's really not. The top risk today is that the generative AI creates output that's fundamentally wrong. And that output's fed into a business process that depends on factual information. That's the number one risk in the use of generative AI based on today's risk. And it may be that 6 months from now, there's a different risk associated with that. So the use of the technology is changing. So if I'm a software developer today, I have access to close to a million large language models that are open source, meaning that anyone, any developer, can go to a website and download these open source large language models that are small in scale and specialized, and they can be used for positive purposes to protect an enterprise and develop unique business functionality, and they are being used that way. Or they can be used for malicious purposes by threat actors to up their game, to improve their capability to bypass controls. And like with any advance in technology, the industry as a whole has to understand it. And we're still in a learning process. We're learning both how to understand it and how to regulate it. By the same time, it's actually in use in the enterprises today. So it clearly is a trend that's an important trend that has significant implications. It's clearly changing very quickly, and therefore it's why it's top on my list, Marianne, for the next year.
Thank you so much, Jim. I've been speaking to Jim Ralph. I'm Marianne Kobasek-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.